relation with Kasdorf. An old friend of mine from high school, as a matter of fact, a guy named Norman Goldstein, went through Westmount High with me and then went to McGill with me in physics. He ended up moving to Pittsburgh. I don't exactly know why, but he ended up working for Westinghouse here in Pittsburgh. And when I moved here in 1972, I looked it up and we saw him and so on. We kept in touch a little bit. Evidently, he was responsible for running some sort of seminar series at the Science and Technology Center. That's where he worked, at Westinghouse, at the R&D Center. And he invited me to give a talk on what's going on in elementary particle physics, which was my field. And I agreed to do that. This was in the spring of 84. And I had heard that Westinghouse had these two grays, and that the rumor was that at least in the evenings those machines were not heavily used. And since I was trying to do things at Pitt in high performance computing, I was trying to figure out some way that we could have access to those machines at night. So I said to him, fine, I'll come and give this seminar. I want you to arrange a meeting with me and the guys who run the supercomputer at Westinghouse. And he said, fine, he would do that. So I went and gave the talk and met the people at Westinghouse. And we had some further discussions, and we got to the stage where we agreed that they would make their machines available to us for teaching purposes only, but that we could give a course on supercomputing using their machines as the machines on which the students would do their homework assignments. And this was the spring of 84, and we agreed we would give this course in the fall of 84. And in the summer of 84, I start to get antsy because we had this agreement, but we didn't have any of the logistics of this thing worked out. And I remember calling up Kasdorf and saying, I'd met Kasdorf through this friend Norman Goldstein, saying, you know, can we get together and nail down some of these details? And he said, sure, but you know, I'm very busy. And we set up an appointment for 6 weeks from when I made the phone call. I figured, I don't know how these corporate guys work. I mean, maybe they're so busy they can't talk to anybody for 6 weeks. Seemed like a long time to me. That was the week before Michael told me, asked me whether I wanted to submit this proposal to the National Science Foundation. And as I thought about it, I thought we really should involve Westinghouse because they had all this experience. So I called Kasdorf back maybe 5 days after I had this previous discussion with him, and I said to him, have you heard about this National Science Foundation solicitation? And he said, sure, I've heard about it. He knew all about it. In fact, he was on one of the technical review committees. I said, do you think Westinghouse would be interested in joining with Pitt and CMU in putting in a proposal? He said, absolutely, we would be interested. So I said, when can we get together? And he said, how's tomorrow morning? And then I understood where that education thing fit in his priority scheme. So that's the funny story about Kasdorf. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's when I started the supercomputing center business, I thought I could keep up my research program in physics and also sort of on the side direct the supercomputing center. It didn't work out that way, so I'm spending almost all my time at the supercomputing center and doing very little in the way of research these days in physics. I still have a teaching obligation.
I'd like you to talk about your teaching career for a little while.
Well,
what have you taught and how has it evolved?
Oh, I've taught. If you come to a place like Pitt, where we have a lot of students who have required physics courses because they want to do pre-med or they want to do engineering or things like that. So the biggest demand is for people to teach the introductory physics courses that are the required courses for all these other things. So I've taught a lot of those courses, first year physics. We have two tracks, the calculus track and the non-calculus track.
There's non-calculus physics?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I prefer teaching that course, but anyway. Because you teach more physics. Otherwise, the kids get too involved in the mathematical aspects of it. So I've taught those courses, and then I've taught a whole series of graduate courses in my field, which is elementary particle physics, field theory, group theory, mathematical methods, computational physics, electromagnetism. I mean, you physicists, by and large, can teach any physics course.
Mm-hmm. You have to prepare. I took a physics course that was a non-math. It was interesting. I never took a physics course in my life. It was just interesting.
I'd like you to review the names of those people around the department and perhaps at CMU you've encountered. I don't know them particularly. Let's say Joe Artman Engler.
I knew Joe, and of course I know Arnold Engler pretty well. Arnold is in elementary particle physics. He's an experimentalist, I'm a theorist.
Okay, your interaction is not there.
One of the things which is very good is that there's very close interaction between the physics departments at Pitt and CMU. We have joint seminars, there's a lot of, I told you I have this long-standing collaboration with Michael Levine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stop that for a minute. My closest interaction has been, as I say, with Michael Levine, and we've written lots of papers together on aspects of quantum electrodynamics in particular. My other really close professional collaborations have been with somebody named Tony Duncan, who actually had been a student of mine at Yale, and we were able to recruit him here at Pitt. I was very pleased that he came here. And he and I have worked on several topics in elementary particle physics. Among the close friends I've had, although I've not written papers together with them in the Pitt Physics Department, the closest would be Ted Newman, who is a world-famous general relativist. And then the particle experimental group, with whom we have interactions, although we don't write papers together, Gene Engels and Bill Cleland in particular. With the CMU theoretical particle people, besides Michael, there's Lincoln Wolfenstein, who's world famous. Dick Kitkoski, who died a couple of years ago. Lingfang Li. So those are the major people with whom I've interacted. The Pitt Physics Department is a big department. We have about 40 faculty members, and we span all sorts of physics. Just down the street here, across the street, Bernie Cohen is a very distinguished nuclear physicist. Played a big role in aspects of nuclear power, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And
is he still working? I don't think so.
Well, he's retired. He's still working.
Yeah.
He's still working.
Hmm. Great guy.
Right. So.
Okay. I'd like to switch the subject quite a bit.
Okay.
For the moment. When you came to Pittsburgh, did you join a synagogue? Where and what have you done there?
When we came to Pittsburgh, we joined Young People's Synagogue. And I like Young People's Synagogue. I like the informality of it, and I like the fact that the people who went there knew what they were doing.
Where did they meet?
They used to meet in the Hebrew Institute building. Now, I have three daughters, and I haven't talked at all about the family. We have to go through that. But the important thing is that I have three daughters. The Young People's Synagogue basically made no concessions to girls. I mean, there was no bat mitzvahs, there was no role for them. They didn't have youth groups or anything like that. So a couple years later, we switched to Beth Sholem, which was very much like the synagogue I grew up in the sense of being a right-wing conservative synagogue. And so my kids went to... they'd gone to Hebrew Institute, and then they ended up going to Beth Sholem. We also were very close friends with Rosalind Rosenblatt, who at that time, mm-hmm. she's from Montreal as well, and as soon as we moved to Pittsburgh, basically, she became my wife's closest friend. And she was, at that time, the principal of Beth Shalom School. So we've been members of Beth Shalom. I don't remember exactly what year we joined. Must have been about 75 or something like that. And so my three daughters, that I'll talk about in a minute, were all bat mitzvahed at Beth Shalom. So let me tell you about my three daughters.
Yes.
The oldest, Adina, was born in New Haven while I was at Yale.
It's
A-D-I-N-A. Adina. And she was born in February of 66. And let's see, she went to school primarily here. She went to Whiteman School and then Reisenstein and then Alderdice and then went off to Yale as an undergraduate. She started out thinking she wanted to be an astronomer. In fact, she's always wanted to be an astronaut. She's very athletic. But after a couple of years at Yale, she switched and she went into humanities and got her undergraduate degree. They have a special program called the Humanities Program, which is very heavily into philosophy and culture and so on of the Renaissance period. And she ended up going to Italy for several months and learning Italian and doing a senior thesis on an art form called pietre dure, which is intarsia. It's this idea of taking small stones, and it's like mosaics, but it's with semi-precious stones.
What's it called again?
Pietre dure, hard stone in Italian, or intarsia, I-N-T-A-R-S-I-A. When she finished that, the thing that intrigued her the most was sort of cognitive science, how the brain works and how we know things, how we learn things. And she was thinking of it more from the philosophy point of view, and I tried to encourage her to think of it more from the biological point of view. My view was that we're not smarter than people were 2,500 years ago. We just have better tools, so we better use them. And so she ended up doing a PhD in neuroscience at UC San Diego.
Isn't Yale a center of that? But anyway, she went to UC San Diego.
She went to UC San Diego after graduating from Yale. And she's now doing a postdoc in neuroscience.
Where?
At Washington University in St. Louis. She's still very interested in the more philosophical questions, somewhat frustrated by the laboratory demands of the laboratory science, where, you know, your day-to-day thinking is not on the big problems, but how you get the stupid apparatus to work and so on. And she's still interested in being an astronaut, so who knows. So that's daughter number one. Daughter number two is Julie. She was born in Israel the year we were in Israel, in Rehovot. She was born in Rehovot in November of 67. It was a very interesting time for us to be in Israel. We got there right after the Six-Day War. She came, well, of course, we were just there a year, so she came back and went to school here again, Whiteman School, Reisenstein, Alderdice, also went to Yale, graduated with a major in math and philosophy, then decided to take a couple years off and lived in Spain for a year and a half, speaks fluent Spanish. Then came back to graduate school in Stanford and got a PhD this past summer in mathematics from Stanford, and then announced to her father's, what shall I say, regret is too strong a word, but certainly not with my approval, that was it for math, Dad. She was enrolling in the Berklee School of Music in Boston, and she was going to learn how to play bass guitar really well. While she was a grad student in Stanford, she was part of an all-women's rock band, and she was playing bass guitar, and she got better and better at it, and she said, this is what I like more than the man. So that's what she's doing right now. She's a student at the Berklee School of Music. So that's daughter number two. And daughter number three is Tammy. Tammy was born here in Pittsburgh. And Tammy changed our lives dramatically. She was born in 1976. The other two girls were 10 and 8 at the time. But the thing that's notable about Tammy is that she has Down syndrome. And that was very devastating to us in the beginning. It took a long time. And we worked very hard with Tammy, and Tammy is a remarkable kid. Tammy has achieved way beyond what anybody would have foreseen when she was born. Being a researcher, I didn't know anything about Down syndrome when she was born. And so the first thing I did was to lock myself in the Western Psych Library, basically, and read all these books for 3 weeks on Down syndrome, and I kept feeling worse and worse because it was really a very depressing picture. And I did not appreciate at the time, but I soon came to understand that all the stuff that's in the literature, that was in the literature at that time, was on kids who had been institutionalized. And kids who stayed home and had a stimulating environment and so on did a lot better than what they thought the norm of Down syndrome was. So Tammy has gone through the regular school system, not the public school system, but the private school system, and graduated from high school, did a year at community college, and is now in Boston in a program at Leslie College for kids with learning disabilities. She's the first kid with Down syndrome that they've taken into this program, and she's doing extraordinarily well.
That's a wonderful story.
Oh, she's great. Oh. Everybody tells me that she's an inspiration to them.
Yeah.
Where's the college at?
Leslie College is just in Cambridge. It's right next door to Harvard.
How's her health been?
She's been healthy. Kids with Down syndrome very often have heart problems. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have those heart problems. She's been quite healthy. There are lots of things that helped us in the community. The JCC was very supportive. When she was born, there's the Association for Retarded Citizens, ARC, that we joined, and there were parent support groups that were very important to us in those early years. And we enrolled her at age two, I guess, I can't even remember how old you had to be to get into the St. Peter's Child Development Center. I've lost track exactly. They were remarkably good. I mean, they taught these kids all sorts of things. They taught them manners, toilet training, how to eat with a knife and fork, all sorts of everyday skills. But just to increasingly normalize them so that when they came into contact with people, people wouldn't be turned off, they wouldn't be frightened. When she was 3 years old, we approached the JCC and asked them. It was already clear when she was 3 years old that she was doing a lot better than a typical Down syndrome kid was. Mm-hmm. We asked them whether they would take her into their preschool program, and they did. And that was wonderful. And Tammy has felt at home at the JCC ever since. I mean, she's been through everything. She's went to J&R camp, and then she went to Emma Farm, and then she became a junior counselor for J&R camp, and there's a special needs program at the JCC that she's been a part of.
What's her status of self-awareness with respect to the fact that she's unusual?
Well, she knows that she has Down syndrome.
Does that mean anything?
It does, in the sense that she will tell you that what it means is that she'll learn things less quickly than other people will learn them. But but we were careful not to tell her that there were things she couldn't learn, that it was too hard. There was nothing that was too hard for her.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of the things we did when she was 6 years old was we did some facial surgery to decrease the strangeness of the look.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that that they thought would be useful at the time was to do a psychological evaluation of her to get a sense of her self-esteem and so mm-hmm. on, and then see whether or not there was any difference afterwards from this surgery. And it was remarkable because her level of self-esteem before the surgery was so high. I mean, there was no way. She was confident, she was sure about things, and she's still that way.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to your family, that's a wonderful story.
Yeah, no, she's a great success story. Mm-hmm. And
what is she doing? Is she taking anything particular?
Yeah, at the community college, she spent a year. They have a food services program, so she's a graduate of their food services mm-hmm. program. Essentially, she can, you know, you learn how to work in a cafeteria, you learn the rules of the health requirement, the health department mm-hmm. rules, and things like that.
Does she retain the stuff?
Oh yeah, she has a spectacularly good memory.
How does she interact with your other two daughters?
Number two daughter, Julie, is her surrogate mother.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely remarkable what that interaction is. She is, Julie is a Pied Piper with kids. I don't quite understand it, but with Tammy, it's just off scale. So they're wonderful. Adina is a bit more distant from Tammy, and vice versa. I mean, they get along fine, but the relationship with Julie is so close.
Let me switch the subject again a little bit.
You've
mentioned several.
Wait, I just want to interrupt you for a minute because there's not very much time on that table. What your wife is doing.
Okay.
We aren't going to get done.
You got another tape?
Not today. Yeah, we're not allowed to do but one tape at a time.
Well, if we only have 10 minutes.
Okay, go ahead. I got another tape.
So what do you want me to talk about my wife?
We don't really know any. What, is your wife working now?
Sure. So let me tell you about my wife. As I told you, I met her the day before she entered McGill as a freshman at a dance at Hillel where I was the president. So we dated for a long time. I went off to graduate school, and we got married basically 4 years later. And then I was still not finished graduate school, so the first year we got married, I was finishing off graduate school, and she moved down to Princeton. She graduated from McGill in physical therapy. As I told you, she went to Hebrew Day School as a kid. She went to the Protestant high school system, graduated from, it's called Outremont High, and then went to McGill and got a diploma in physical therapy. She then stayed another year at McGill. Physical therapy was 3 years. She took another year at McGill. Then we got married. She took a year at Penn. And then we moved to
Penn?
She commuted from Princeton to Penn. And then we lived in Tennessee for a year in Oak Ridge, and she worked in a hospital there as a physical therapist, and then we moved to New Haven, and she worked again as a physical therapist in New Haven. When we moved, so she worked as a physical therapist the whole time, part-time when the kids were very little, and then as they were growing up, she worked more and more. When we moved to Pittsburgh, she ended up working at McGee in physical therapy, which was a part-time position, and decided, well, the physical therapy was getting A, more routine, B, maybe physically a little bit more difficult. She wanted to do something else, and I remember, I don't know, there was somebody named Carol Klein, you may recall, but at Pitt, and she was very interested in sort of career opportunities for women and so on. And Carol suggested, Dodie went to talk to Carol about what sorts of opportunities might be appropriate for somebody with her background and her interest levels and her skills, and as they talked more and more, Carol convinced her that she should go into hospital administration. So she went back to graduate school, got a degree at Pitt through the Grad School of Public Health in hospital administration, and she has worked in hospital administration ever since.
Where did she go?
She started off, she did an internship at Mercy, then her first, then she did a one-year stint out in Greensburg, and then she started working at Jefferson Hospital, and for the past 7 years, I think it is, she's been at Forbes, and Forbes ran two hospitals. One is the one at Monroeville and the one here in Wilkinsburg. And she was involved with both of them, but now most of her work is out at Regional Hospital in Monroeville, so she's a hospital administrator. She's also been, she has a very good Jewish background, as I mentioned. She's fluent in Hebrew. We've lived in Israel a while.
What are you, both your participations in the Jewish community, both yours and...
Yeah, well, I was just going to tell you, she was president of Jewish Family and Children's Service here. She's been very active in, sort of for obvious reasons, in the special needs aspect of the Jewish community. She and I have both been board members of UJF. I've been... When I got here, I was very active in the university part of the campaign, the Federation campaign, and I've retained that activity. So I'm also a member of the board of AJC right now, and I'm on the board of the Federation.
AJC, American Jewish
Committee, right. When she was president of Jewish Family and Children's Service, she really worked very, very hard at that job.
Yeah, I'd like you to refer to some discussion of the different agencies. Make a comment about AJC, the American Jewish Committee, Federation, whichever. And in other words, in relation of yourself to these Jewish agency participations, do you have any thoughts you'd like to leave?
Oh my. I don't know. I mean, first of all, it's clear from both our upbringings that...
Talk about yourself.
My mother, for example, was the president of Hadassah in Montreal, and so she had been very active in community affairs. My father was not very active in community affairs. But it was clear that, I mean, we were just brought up with a sense of social obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And Dodie also, presumably, got this from home, although her parents were not. Her mother was active in Pioneer Women.
Mm-hmm.
But here, we've been, as I say, we've both been very active in the Federation. I don't have any deep thoughts about it.
That's okay.
I happen to like American Jewish Committee because I find that of all the Jewish organizations that I'm a member of, their sort of intellectual biases are the closest to my own. And as I say, Dodie's more interested in the social aspect, so Jewish Family and Children's Service was where she put most of her energy. And we've been, of course, we've never been board members of JCC, but mostly because of Tammy, we've had an involvement with the JCC, and particularly the special needs part of the JCC.
With respect to the American Jewish Committee, that's undergone a significant change in the last 2 or 3 years in their goal now of fostering Judaism as a religion. Have you noticed that, and do you have any comment? Would that be American Jewish Committee function or role?
I'm not sure what you mean by fostering Judaism as a religion. I think
they've been running these ads in the New York Times.
Right, what it means to be Jewish.
Okay.
And I think they want to increase the sense of Jewish identity, and I think that's a very important thing. You know, I mentioned to you I have three daughters. They're now 30, 28, and 20. None of them is married. None of them has a serious boyfriend at the moment. And one of the things which is, I believe, strongly missing in the Jewish community is a way for people like my, especially the older two daughters, to meet Jewish guys. And so one of the things that we've been trying to do is to establish a group, let's say, within the American Jewish Committee that fosters this. Now, actually, more than that, I mean, they have a young people's group in the American Jewish Committee, but I signed my daughter up for the one in St. Louis, and she just didn't like it. And I don't know. It's just